It depends which snake they're bitten by, but if the owner is there when they're bitten, they oftentimes will see the dog or cat collapse. They will then maybe all right for an hour or something like that, maybe not even as long as that, and then the other symptoms start coming.
Welcome to the Positive Pet Podcast. This podcast is where pet heroes and expert advice come to life. I'm Aaron Nauta, your host, a passionate animal activist, first aid trainer, and safety coach. This podcast was created for pet owners like you, where each week we'll share heartwarming stories and essential tips to keep your pets happy, healthy, and safe. Let's embark on this positive adventure together. Welcome back to the Positive Pet Podcast. Today, we continue our conversation with Dr. Julie. In this episode, we shift our focus to another critical topic, snakes. Dr. Julie shares her advice on recognizing the signs of snake bites, what to do in emergencies, and how to keep your pets safe during snake season. Tune in for more expert tips and advice to keep your pets healthy and safe. Welcome back. So we're just talking about snakes now and understanding the risk for pets. So snakes are another significant concern for pet owners, especially in certain parts of Australia. What are the most common types of snake bites that you've encountered, Dr. Julie, in your practice?
Yeah. So here in Canberra, we tend to see eastern brown snakes are the most common that we see. We also see red-bellied blacks. They're the two most common ones that we see here. We often don't know what has bitten the patient because often the bite is not seen by the owner. But typically we can sometimes make a bit of a guess or just by the symptoms of the patient, or there are actually tests that you can do, tests on the urine to determine which type of snake bit the patient.
And so what would be some of those, somebody's out for a walk, they didn't realize that their pet got bitten by a snake. What would be some signs and symptoms or immediate action? What should they be looking for?
So what sometimes will happen is that the dog will just collapse. They'll just instantly collapse, but actually then will right themselves and might be okay for a small period of time before the other symptoms start exhibiting themselves. Again, it depends which snake they're bitten by, but if the owner is there when they're bitten, they oftentimes will see the dog or cat collapse. They will then maybe all right for an hour or something like that, maybe not even as long as that, and then the other symptoms start coming. Obviously, if you're not there when it happens, it's a little bit more, you won't see that actual collapse. You'll just basically see the symptoms that come on after that.
And so what are the, so they've collapsed, they're better for a bit, or you know, you didn't see them collapse and then they start showing signs that, like, what would be the signs and symptoms that we're looking for when they're suffering from a snake bite? What's just some common ones?
Yeah. So if it's the eastern brown snake, what that tends to cause is an inability for the patient to clot. And so the symptoms that we can see can be multiple. Sometimes these poor animals come in coughing up blood, and it can sometimes be a significant amount of blood. But sometimes they can just come in really weak because they're having internal bleeding, and we can then do tests to determine what is the cause of that internal bleeding and hopefully then come up with our diagnosis of a snake bite. That's typically with the eastern brown snakes that cause this inability to clot. With the red-bellied black, we tend to see less specific symptoms, but they tend to cause problems in the muscles. So a lot of these dogs come in painful and lame, and the cats as well. We typically see the worst symptoms in dogs, which doesn't make a lot of sense because typically dogs tend to be bigger than cats. But it turns out cats are more sensible. And cats, if they do get bitten, are wise and just run away straight away. Whereas dogs, you know, it's been recorded on people's CCTV at home. They'll see a snake, they get bitten by it, and then they're just trying to play with the snake or attack the snake. They don't know to run away. And so sometimes they will get multiple bites from the same snake. And so they have a bigger load of toxin. So that can be mean that they have biggest, worst symptoms when they come into us.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I guess once they're bitten, what immediate actions are we going to do? Because if you've done human first aid, you're putting a pressure mobilization bandage, encouraging them not to move. But with a dog, you can't just tell them don't move or anything. What is the immediate action for pet owners to do?
So the difficulty with pets are we often can't see where they've been bitten. Even when they come into us, we don't know where they've been bitten oftentimes. So you can't really put a bandage on unless you physically see the snake. bite the patient. You're not going to know when they're bitten, so you can't really put a bandage on. You've just got to get them to the vets as soon as possible. That's really, unfortunately, the only thing that you can do is take them to the vets, and they can then deliver the antitoxin, because we do thankfully have an antitoxin that we can use with these patients. And thankfully, the antitoxin that we use actually treats a vast array of snake bites. And so we don't actually have need to know necessarily what snake it is that's bitten the animal. It's good enough to know that a snake has bitten the animal, and we can just use this antitoxin that treats a number of different toxins that are in snake bites.
Would there be like a time frame from when they get bitten to getting them to the vet?
My advice would be get to the vet as soon as possible. Some of these animals can start hemorrhaging very quickly. Sometimes they don't even make it to the vets. It depends on what sort of side the patient is and what sort of load of toxin they've had. But sometimes they can unfortunately pass away on the journey from the owner's house to our clinic. And my advice is just get to the vets straight away. Don't even ring them. Just go to your emergency vet and get there as soon as you can. You can ring on the way if you're able to, but just the patient needs to get to the vets as soon as possible so we can administer that antitoxin as soon as possible.
Yeah, I guess that would be a really important key as well, is phoning on the way there so that you guys could be ready.
Absolutely.
To get that anti-venom and get more information on that en route so that when they get there, they can just go straight in.
Yeah. As I say, some of them unfortunately don't make it to the clinic, but those that do, we have a very high success rate of saving them because we're very fortunate to have the antitoxin. And also we have amazing nursing care available nowadays. Our nurses are amazing. These animals get looked after very well when we've got the diagnosis. The prognosis for these ones, I would say, is much... We weren't going to talk about ticks, were we? The outlook for these ones are pretty good if we can get a diagnosis.
And so I guess moving into more prevention then, because that would be the best thing, is just not have this happen at all. And so what would be some prevention measures that we can do, or we can educate pet owners on? And what would be your advice on that, as well as where is high risk areas and possible seasons for this?
Yeah. So again, the snakes tend to be seen in the warmer seasons, because obviously here in Canberra, the temperature gets pretty low in the winter months. So we don't see snake bites in the winter months. We just see them in the warmer summer months. And there's a couple of different places, really. The eastern browns tend to be in the sort of more bush type of area. So if you're walking your dog in the bush, you've got a significant risk of them being bitten by a snake. Sorry, the red-bellied blacks tend to be more around sort of watery areas, ponds and that sort of thing. So you might want to avoid those with your patient, with your pet in the summer months. To be honest, that's all you can do, is avoid these areas. There isn't really any prevention that we have other than avoiding the patient getting bitten by the snake in the first place.
And I guess that, possibly keeping them on lead then, rather than allowing them to just run in the bush and stay on the trails and stuff like that.
Yes. We even get animals that are bitten in people's back gardens, in their backyards. Unfortunately, nowhere is safe. And it is obviously impossible in some circumstances to keep your eye on your dog 100% of the time. If you've got children and a job, it's difficult to keep an eye on your dog 24 hours a day. So unfortunately, these things do happen in people's homes, but it's much more likely to happen when you're out on a walk, particularly in the bush sort of areas.
Is there anything that people can use to deter them from being in their backyards and stuff, or right away from that area? Or
not that I'm aware of, no.
So how do you approach then educating pet owners regarding all this and bite prevention?
Yeah, the only thing that we can advise people to do is just avoid the areas where snakes are most likely. As you say, if we're going on a bush walk, they really should keep their animal on a lead, because once they've run off into the bush, you have no idea what's going to happen. But even if they're on a lead, there's a small risk as well that they could still get bitten. A lot of times we find it happens with people who live on property, who've got large area of land that they own, so they're not necessarily able to watch their dog 24/7. The dog has the runaround of the property, and it's those patients that are typically going to be bitten by a snake. And that's the real advice for those people, is really the dogs shouldn't be let out unsupervised during those warmer months in the year. But not everybody has an indoor dog. Some people do have outdoor dogs. So really, maybe they should be confined to quite a small area where it's less likely that they're going to see a snake or be bitten by a snake.
Yeah, especially if they're like a working dog on a farm or something like that, you'd maybe just, when they're not working, to keep them close. Is there any particular myths or misconceptions that people might have about snake bites? I know with humans, people still tell me, oh, let's put a tourniquet on. But is there something, anything like that, that people are still thinking, or any myths out there?
No, I've come across. I think in humans, weren't you supposed to at one point suck it out and spit it? But
yes, that was definitely a thing.
Yeah, people don't usually do that in their pets, thankfully. Yeah, we don't. I don't think we've really got that many misconceptions, really, in all honesty. People in this area know there are snakes, and so people are pretty wised up about it. And oftentimes when the patient is brought in, people will already suspect that they've been bitten by a snake. It's more difficult in cats. They don't show exactly the same symptoms in cats. We don't tend to see the bleeding problem as much in cats. They tend to just be incredibly painful. And as I say, they tend not to be as stupid as the dogs. They don't play with the snakes, so they typically don't get such a high load of the toxin. So typically, the cats do really well. They need to stay in with us. They need to stay on pain relief. They need to stay on fluids. They need the antivenin as well. But they usually do really well. They don't have the horrible other problems that we see in dogs, probably because they are not getting as much toxin. But yeah, unfortunately, the only thing that you can... I don't think there's any myths that I'm aware of.
Awesome. So one thing we do like to share with our listeners is a memorable story or something that's happened when you've been in practice that involved maybe a memorable story regarding a snake bite or something like this.
Yeah, so I'm new to Australia, so my first snake bite is very memorable because it's not in my brain to necessarily be thinking about a snake bite. But I had a dog in that was really pale, and obviously I'd been reading up about snakes, so I thought this was a possibility. So there is a pretty simple test that we can do, because obviously not every dog is going to come in and pee for us, so we can test their urine. We first of all do quite a broad test, which basically we take blood from the patient and see how long it takes to clot. And if it doesn't clot within sort of 2 minutes, then we are very suspicious of a snake bite. And then we can go on to further tests. So this dog came in, a large breed dog, he was pale. And I did have my spider senses thinking, oh gosh, is this going to be my first snake patient? So I did the first test and it took a long time for his blood to clot, which, as I say, is typical in the dogs that are bitten by the Eastern Browns. We then went on to do the more specific tests for clotting, and they're not 100% diagnostic for snake bites, but if you get a rise in one of the clotting parameters, it's highly likely that the patient has been bitten by a snake. So yes, I was lucky that it was, you know, I recognized it in this patient because, as I say, I'd never seen a snake bite before. And thankfully, we were able to treat the patient with some antivenin, and the patient stayed in with us for 2 days over the weekend and actually did super well. The clotting times improved and he was really lucky and he was able to go home after 48 hours. So thankfully, as I say, if you can get us into them when they've got those early symptoms, we have a much better chance of success, because the problem is if your dog has played with a snake and had several bites, it could have a lot of problems clotting your dog and they can then bleed very substantially. And the sooner we see them, the sooner that we can treat them. I mean, some of these cases we actually need to give blood transfusions to because they've bled so much. And actually sometimes with the snakes, we sometimes have to put those patients on a ventilator as well, because not only does it cause bleeding, the snakes, they have other toxins in the bite, which include toxins that prevent the muscles from working properly. So they cause breakdown of the muscles, and also toxins that can cause nerve paralysis. So all these things, three things in combination, a patient can bleed into their lungs, the nerves to tell them to breathe properly aren't working properly, and the muscles that they use to breathe aren't working properly. So sometimes these patients can't breathe very well. So we have to, again, breathe for them. Typically, a snake patient, hopefully, if they do go onto a ventilator, which are only the very, very worst cases, they might only be on a ventilator for 1 or 2 days, not as long as, for example, a tick bite. So they are more fortunate that they don't tend to have to be on the ventilator for quite such a long period. But it is possible with a snake bite that the patient ends up being on a ventilator, but thankfully not that many.
Yeah, I guess if they make it into the practice, they get the antivenom, they're going to be a lot better off than if it was that kind of paralysis tick and all that. What do you think?
I think the antivenin that we have for the snakes is very effective. The problem with the tick paralysis is the tick will have already been on there for sort of 6, 7, 8 days before we see the symptoms, which has given the toxin plenty of time. Yeah. Bind to the nerve endings.
And a lot more.
Yeah. So oftentimes by the time we see them, as I say, that the anti-serum that we use is only effective on any of the toxin that hasn't already bound in a tick patient. So it's less successful. But in a snake, hopefully we're seeing these patients within the first couple of hours. So the antivenin is typically more effective.
Amazing. So I just have one last question for you. Last question is, do you have a cat you mentioned before?
I have two cats. I came here actually via America. I did spend some time in America as a vet there. So I came via America, and actually trying to import your pets from America into Australia is the hardest thing I think I've ever had to do. It took a year.
Very hard.
So I've got two cats, and we left our dog behind in America because he was getting old. Love him. So I've just only got two cats, two little black and white cats.
So if your cats had a superpower, what would the superpower be if they could do anything?
Oh, love, that is an interesting question. I think I'd like my cats to be able to read my emotions and be able to help me. If I'm in a bad mood, they'd know, and they would just come and cuddle me. They're very good at cuddling me anyway, but it'd be really nice if I was sad or angry, that they would be able to perceive this. I think dogs are better at perceiving human emotions than cats are. Maybe that's why we call dogs our best friends. So I just wish my cats were a little bit better at it. Love them.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. This also was just really interesting. And I think that, yeah, everybody's going to get a lot out of this. And I really look forward to having you back on the show to talk about other subjects in the future. So thank you very much, Dr. Julie.
Thank you, Erin. I really enjoyed it.
And for those of you listening from home, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with a friend. See you next week.